and gentlemen, it's spoiler in time, which means we are going to take some time out from our Cord Killers show, where we talk about the devices and the services you need to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, and talk about the things we watched this week. Firefly, Our Mrs. Reynolds, Game of Thrones, the season finale of episode 7, and Rick and Morty episode 6 of season 3. But first, I am season 47 of Tom Merritt, and with me is Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man, season 42 right here. Good to see you. I just jump right into the movie draft, but we don't have that. We already have a champion and everything. So
no, the
I guess
movie draft is not over. You're not going to short me of a week of
okay, another week. Hey, let's check in with our new segment.
Because I'm winning.
Hooray for Tom, the segments. Tom. He's the best, y'all. All right.
I don't know why we're doing this segment. I mean, it's pretty much over.
You bastard. You're killing me.
No, but the summer movie draft, just so you know, ends September 1st, which is in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And the good news is we already have a slate for the winter movie draft.
That's what I wanted to bring up. I don't want to say that whatever team you're on maybe has an unfair advantage, but
especially because you're on my team. But
word on the street is that you might be sleeping with the commissioner. Is that true? Can you confirm or deny that?
I mean, I don't want to call her the commissioner in case that sounds like a conflict of interest.
But she's definitely the one deciding on the slate, and she's the commissioner. Come on.
Okay, fine. But she did it in cooperation with her coworkers at Fandango and Rotten Tomatoes.
Wait a minute. So have they told the folks over at Fandango or Rotten Tomatoes what we're up to? Like, are they aware of this game?
There is no official connection. No, let me make that very clear right now.
No. I mean unofficially. I just want to know if they think this is...
She consulted with one of the people she works with to be like, okay, what should I put in this? And they had a lot of fun putting it together. So
I'll tell you what, man. It's a... winter movie draft looking an awful lot like the summer movie draft these days. Like, we have real blockbusters. No longer is winter the land of Oscar bait, but instead we've got, you know, we got the new Kingsman movie coming out. We've got...
You want to just run down the list real
quick? Yeah, yeah.
So we got Kingsman, we got the new Ninjago movie, Battle of the Sexes, Stronger, Flatliners, American Made, Blade Runner, that's 2099, 2049, something like that. My Little Pony, Mountain Between Us, Happy Death Day, The Foreigner, Tyler Perry Presents Boo 2, Geostorm and the Snowstorm, Jigsaw, Suburbicon, A Bad Mom's Christmas, Thor Ragnarok, Daddy's Home 2, Murder on the Orient Express, Justice League, Wonder, Coco, Molly's Game, The Disaster Artist, The Shape of Water, The Last Jedi, Pitch Perfect 3, Jumanji, and The Greatest Showman.
That's lots of really good stuff, right?
Yep. And if you're watching the video, you saw a couple question marks in there. Those are there for them to say, like, if you needed to swap something out, if you guys decided, oh, you didn't put this movie that we absolutely have to have, or if something gets moved, like, those are the ones that are kind of on the bubble. But all else not changing, that's going to be the slate.
Yeah.
It's late.
Should be a fun thing. We'll probably figure out when is the first movie of these come out?
The first movie is September 22nd. So
okay,
we got a little bit of time.
We got a couple of weeks.
We'll have the date and slate of guests shortly.
Yeah.
Let's check in with some feedback, which we call triage, because we're triaging things with your emails. Why did we call it triage again?
Because that was the only unused battle metaphor word left.
Because all of segments and Cord Killers are battle. Yeah. Right. Hey, yeah. Triage, where we read your feedback. Graham writes in, I accidentally ended up watching all of The Defenders this weekend and can report that while I generally liked it, if you didn't like the second half of Daredevil Season 2 and the story from Iron Fist, you could probably pass on this. The Defenders is effectively the conclusion to those story arcs. Speaking of story, most of the Netflix Marvel shows feel to me like they run a couple episodes too long. The Defenders is no exception. Watching through it, I couldn't help but think how much tighter things would have been if there were no standalone Iron Fist and an abridged take on that saga was woven in as a prologue of sorts. Keep up the good work, Graham.
Man, imagine how good that would have been just to break the rules and not do a full season, but instead just be like, make it like a 3-hour miniseries of Iron Fist and then jump right in.
So true. I don't think you have to watch. I like the way he phrased this. I don't think you have to watch Iron Fist, frankly, but I think you have to know the story from Iron Fist and say, okay, I may have problems with the fighting or the direction or the length, but the story of Iron Fist, I'm okay with. And then you'll like Defenders. Because I did not like Iron Fist, but where they went from Iron Fist and the Defenders, I was fine with.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, I only watched the first episode of Iron Fist. So I guess I'll have to.
Just read the Wikipedia article. Yeah, I don't really need to watch any of it, frankly.
I think so.
Yeah.
Right on. But thank you very much, Graham, for sending that in.
And on to Rick and Morty, episode 6 of season 3, and the detoxification of Rick and Morty. I have to say, part of me thinks that my problems with Rick and Morty, and again, when we say problems, it's on a sliding scale. Rick and Morty is fantastic.
Sure.
But I may be enjoying it a little bit less than I did previous seasons. I realized while I was watching it, part of the problem may be that I'm having to watch it. And at this point, it's like, oh, okay, this isn't just relaxation. I got to pay attention to it. Part of it is that harder to find new and cool things to treat in this format. But this was the first one that had me laughing involuntarily in a couple of weeks, because I loved that we got totally new perspectives on Rick and Morty's characters in a way that I didn't expect and hadn't seen before.
So I could totally dig on that. And in fact, it reminded me in structure of one of my favorite episodes from season 2, which was Beth and Jerry go to therapy, and then they have, you know, they're the versions of each other that they see themselves as their own entities on here. But I got to admit, I watched this one last night. I got back from Daytona Beach in Florida, and so I watched Game of Thrones, which was longer than I expected. I watched Our Mrs. Reynolds, waiting for it to come on, and then this came on. So I'm not going to lie, I was definitely getting sleepy by the time I watched this. So I remember the conceit, and I remember most of the story beats. I don't remember laughing out loud on this one. Yeah. But then again, I was watching it for the show very last minute.
It was about halfway through before I found myself actually laughing. And I was laughing at the Rick that doesn't have his toxic side. Like, yes. The Morty was a little more like, oh, okay, that's totally what I would think of with Morty. But when Rick burped and apologized was the first time I laughed. Because yes. I'm like, oh, that's he would never, you'd never do that. That's hilarious.
I'll tell you what, man, it's all of a sudden being in the middle of season 3, I'm realizing how much of season 1 and season 2 was fueled by the giddy feeling that I can't believe this is actually a show. I can't believe they're actually going there and that they're taking this in that direction. That trick is gone in season 3. There's none of my appreciation can be fueled by that. In the very first episode, I was able to get excited because it's like, oh, how awesome that they're able to pay off all these bits and backstory that they set up in the first two seasons. But now that we're into the kind of the individual standalone episodes outside of Pickle Rick, I haven't really seen any episode that really blew me away.
And there are things that I'm looking at and saying, that's funny in my head. Like when they go on the 6-day adventure and they're basically hungover from adventuring.
Oh,
It's a metaphor for going out drinking and realizing that you're not doing it because it's fun anymore. You're just doing it to do it. And I was like, oh, that's funny. But it still didn't get me the visceral reaction. It was all a very intellectual reaction.
Yeah, but then again, I have to view all of this through the same lens that I do with like the Westworld thing. Like it was really an eye opener to realize that we were suffering Westworld going week to week, and that the superior experience was just binging it straight through, and you got a fundamentally different time. I have to feel like that's the case on this one as well.
I feel like
it's not fair to judge it on first viewing.
On week to week, plus I need to sit down and watch this for the show. Suddenly it's a whole different set of conditions than like, oh, I want to watch Rick and Morty now. thing.
Yeah.
And turn it off, because it is very much a show that benefits from your state of mind being receptive to it, I think.
Yeah. In fact, I almost wonder if maybe I'll go back and revisit this episode and give you an updated opinion.
Yeah, like a refreshed look.
I finished this episode. So how did you guys think about the ending of this episode? Because it took me like 10 or 15 minutes to understand why they reset Morty like they did. I didn't get it at first glance. Not that it is hard to discern, but my first immediate reaction was like, well, Morty's doing fine. Why can't Rick just go to him instead of
needing because
Morty to be the subservient?
The problem with Rick was that he wasn't a genius, as much of a genius anymore without his bad side. The problem with Morty was that he was overconfident. Mm-hmm. But you're right. When they show the consequences of that overconfidence, it's no longer like, oh, he's a bad date, right? That was like, oh, maybe Morty does need to go back and be a whole Morty. They show him like successful, making a lot of money, living in a nice apartment with a woman he loves. Of like, well, you know, I guess Rick's just being an asshole.
That's part of the biting humor that they do is that they're bad people and. It's that Always Sunny in Philadelphia effect, right? Yeah. Where it's like, he definitely would be better off without Rick. Too bad that's not the show.
And like, without his toxic half, too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like that the drones turned into Voltron.
That was fun.
I did enjoy that.
All right. Let's talk about Game of Thrones, the season finale. I am most surprised that reviewers that I look at, like Laura Hudson or Anna Lee Newitz, who are very knowledgeable and write great summaries of Game of Thrones, are very cool to, in Laura Hudson's place, very cold about this finale.
Well, and not just the finale, but this whole season in general. Yeah. People have, as a matter of fact, wasn't there a dig on one of the ad breaks for Rick and Morty where they said Game of Thrones 2011, like a posthumous, 2011 to 2016.
Oh, I missed that one. I didn't see that.
Yeah. Look, we've had a very long, very wonderful, delightful, strange journey with these characters and this world, and it is time to wrap things up. And when you wrap things up, especially when you've made such a long, expansive set of stories, it's going to have to go fast. And that's fine with me. Yeah, I thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it.
Guy Smiley 777 is also saying something I've seen a lot of people in various forums saying, which is the season felt like fanfic. And I think there's a little bit of a Mary Sue accusation there. I think that feeling also comes from a change in tone. So there's the speeding up and the change in tone, because even though this isn't the first season where we're covering material that George R. R. Martin didn't set up, this is the first season that isn't even building on material that George R. R. Martin set up. And when George R. R. Martin spends literally years perfecting a storyline, Benioff and Weiss get to benefit from that and say, okay, we understand all the motivations and all the subtleties, and so we can portray them. Now they're having to create all of that from scratch that isn't already there. Like, granted, there's a lot in Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen that was built by George R. R. Martin, but how they interact and where they go, Benioff and Weiss and their team are having to create from scratch, which is inevitably going to change the way the tone feels. And when you combine that with the speeding up of things, because, hey, we're getting towards the end, we actually have to have Daenerys arrive in Westeros. I mean, would you rather have it the other way, where she's still over in Essos and you're like, clock's ticking, when are you actually going to develop something here? So I think that's causing some of these reactions, because it is a different story. I don't personally find that bad. I enjoyed the hell out of this season and this finale particularly. I called the Littlefinger scene, but I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. I was like, I hope it's this, but I really was less than 50% sure I was going to get it, and then I got it.
Yeah, that was a delightful scene, especially like they've trained us to just figure that Littlefinger is immortal and always will get away. Like that's his superpower, is to always, you know, sneak off and live another day. And the fact not only to have his story come to an end, but to do so abruptly, so harshly on both parts. So you get that great moment of Sansa doing the ha-ha, we're on to you. And then but then when it comes to the execution, just the speed with which she slices his throat, it was so amazing. It was I enjoyed that quite a bit. Arya was amazing, and she just, you know, this shrugging like, hey man, I'm the executioner, whatevs.
Yeah. Well, and also I think a lot of people are doing what Eileen and I did, where we're like looking at theories and planning and talking and what's going to happen, to the point where they cover all the possibilities. And then when one of those possibilities happens, they accuse the show they love so much of being predictable. And you're hoisting yourself on your own petard there. Like, just because you figured out, like, these are the six different ways this story could go, and then, wow, shocker, one of them happens, doesn't mean it's predictable. It just means that you're spending a lot of time thinking about this show.
Right, right. Which was great. I enjoyed not wasting our time and seeing a zombie dragon in action.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty clear that Tormund lives, even though he's on top of that tower as he says, "Run." There's no way.
Yeah, if you don't show him dead, he's alive. That's what I think.
Right, correct. Well, especially after teasing us with him almost being dead last episode, you don't save him just to ambiguously watch him collapse in a tower or whatever.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to pretend for my own sanity that was a blue spew of ice that was forcing the wall down, because blue flame don't make any sense to me.
Tom, you don't get to be the guy who buys the living dead but doesn't buy blue flame. You buy the ticket, you take the ride, and if it's blue flame, it's going to be blue flame.
If they come and they guarantee to me that's living flame, I'll deal with it. But while it's ambiguous, I guess that's what made me think of it. We're talking about ambiguity. I'm going to decide
it's spirit flame, a new type of flame that you've never seen before.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they're ice people and fire kills them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and as they're pointing out in the chat room, blue is the color of a flame. It's the hottest flame. Why not go with that?
Because the hottest flame would kill them even more.
Yeah.
But they're not using it on their guys.
No, but it's coming out of an ice dragon.
Oh, uh-huh. I see what you're saying.
Well,
G.I. Joe and Cobra, they developed independent blaster technology that had red blasters and blue blasters.
All right. Also, here's another criticism that I don't have, but I'm seeing, is that, they just had to lay it out right in front of us that Lyanna Stark and Rhaegar were married, and then they cast Viserys to play Rhaegar.
Oh, did they?
No, they didn't, but the guy kind of did look like the same actor.
Yeah, he looked like a Targaryen.
Because he's a Targaryen.
Was the point, right? Okay, so number one, thank God. Thank God they finally let us off the hook on all that stuff. This is Game of Thrones, it's a good thing that I'm already this invested. Otherwise, I'd give you a good finger shaking for taking this long to catch up with the fans. That's fine. Great. So they all got together and they explained everything, including having Samwell come all the way up from the bottom of South America to say, no, let me even clearer explain more stuff to you, sirs.
Let me take credit for what Gilly found.
Yes, right? Speaking of which, that was that moment with Littlefinger was great, because like the moment she accused him, I realized, no, of course, you got a three-eyed raven. They know everything. There's nothing that they don't know now.
Nobody saw me.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, that was deeply satisfying.
The day he took over as Peter Baelish, the old Peter Baelish sat down and said, you're going to have to eat a silver bowl someday.
How did you do it when you were Littlefinger? The parables of the bowls of Baelish. So what else?
The G20 summit. We can't forget the G20.
That was pretty great. Opening.
I can't believe no one died.
Yeah, it was electric in all the right ways. Everyone played their part perfectly. I enjoyed all of the asides that they said to each other while they were walking. It was good to see everyone. The gang's all here.
I actually thought the Brienne Hound thing played really well. It was nice to see, you know, Bronn and Tyrion have not an overly emotional moment, but still a little emotion. And Bronn pulling Podrick aside to go get a drink. It was a nice touch. I love that.
Yeah. And Podrick having these kind of waves of fealty, or I don't know. Yeah, his conflicted nature of like, hey, man, I'm supposed to back you up. Who's you? I don't know. There's a lot of yous that I'm supposed to back up here now. Yeah. I'm Podrick.
I don't know that I entirely buy that Tyrion would trust Cersei when she decides that, you know, she's that she's going to change her mind, but he wants to so bad. Maybe he fools himself.
You know, that's been, this is far and away Tyrion's weakest season, right? Is that fair to say? Like we've really enjoyed, he's been kind of us in this whole experience for most of it. And he has lived by his wits and overcome incredible odds. But he's been a completely useless appendage this entire season long. And as if to shine a spotlight on that, when Daenerys and Jon Snow are making the beast with two backs, he's just awkwardly standing there and the camera lingers on him. And I'm like, why are we looking at, wait, what is happening? What is this? It may be that all of this pays off in some way, but I'm going to say for the caliber of actor that you have with Tyrion and the quality of the character that you have, it's criminal that they're wasting him this season the way they have.
Well, we know he wants to be the next in line. And if the Targaryen gets betrothed.
I don't know entirely what they're setting up with that. By the way, my favorite tweet about the whole thing was season one, incest, gross. Season seven, yay, incest.
It's once removed, though.
That's how it happens. That's how it starts. Well,
and also, on Tyrion, though, it's true that it would be weird if he believed that Cersei would go for his plan, but we did see at the end that Jaime is intending to help fight the Ice King
or something. No, he's certainly fed up with Cersei's BS.
And I don't know. I think we could see a rift in the Lannisters in terms of who the armed forces follow.
Yeah. By the way, can I say that when my mind wanders in the world of Game of Thrones, I think I did not realize how bad I wanted a Better Call Saul until Better Call Saul came out. Sure. And I'm going to say something that you're going to think sounds terrible or you're not going to like or you think would be bad. But I'm going to tell you it could be as good as Better Call Saul. I would watch an entire series just about Qyburn. Like this maester gone awry who's dabbling in some dark effing arts who somehow ends up like he's the Better Call Saul of this story.
Oh, it was a great moment. I laughed out loud when, you know, this undead wight has almost bitten the queen. They've chopped it in half and it's not stopped and everyone's in shock. And Qyburn's reaction is, oh, cool. Yeah, let me go pick up that hand.
Qyburn like falls over himself trying to get there to be first in line to take a look and be like, oh, that's clever. I never thought of it that way. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe it's the character actor that they have for him. But I don't know. I enjoy that quite a bit.
Yeah. Granted, not the perfect episode and certainly not the best season ender even, but gave me everything I needed. And I'm very excited about season 8. And I know it's going to be probably 2 years before we even get it, but I can't wait.
Yeah. I don't mind. I don't mind the delayed gratification. I don't mind the fact that, yes, it's all fulfillment. It's all fulfillment. But we have had a tantric relationship with this property, and I'm ready to climax and be done.
Yeah, it's over. We have tension built up, right? I mean, Danny and John are going to find out that their aunt and nephew, or aunt and nephew. So how are they going to react to that? Daenerys is from a family where that's not even that unusual.
Oh, no. Not only okay, but like that's the rules. Them's the rules in the Targaryen line. It's the only.
Yeah,
way.
Exactly. So they're going to have a spat about that. And bigger spat is going to be the fact that Jon's going to find out he's next in line for the throne in front of Daenerys. And what are they going to do about that?
Yeah, I don't know. Whatevs. Just give us more sexy doing it on a boat, and we'll be happy.
We got a little bit of foreshadowing with what's his name? The
Qyburn. He's the Better Call Saul of the series.
The kid who was
enslaved. Bran.
The Greyjoy.
Theon. Okay, yeah. By the way, since when is not having your junk cut off somehow a superpower? And that was
a good physical gag. That was
it was awfully clumsy. It was just like I don't.
You can't hurt me there. Yeah.
The way it was edited at first, I thought, was he stabbed? I wasn't looking, paying 100% attention. Like, oh, did he get stabbed? And I was like, no, they tried to do a nut shot.
Yeah, it didn't work. Yeah. But then they do it two more times. I'm like, yeah. We get it. His junk's cut off. Jesus.
But we see a little bit of foreshadowing with that conversation between him and John, where John is like, you are a Stark and you are a Greyjoy, where I think that John will take that to heart, and where both being a Stark and a Targaryen on his chest going forward.
Yeah.
Well, I too am looking forward to better Raven Qyburn. Come soon. All right, let's talk about Firefly, Our Mrs. Reynolds, which is, of course, a lovely episode where Mal gets married. Aw.
Yeah, and Chief of Police Aceveda is a pirate who wants to steal the stuff.
Yeah, we not only get Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, we also get Benito Martinez from The Shield.
Yeah, I feel like you and I have talked about this at some point. Maybe it was years ago.
I think we might
have even been not on. Do you know you and I sometimes interact not with cameras around? Did you know that's a thing?
Do we? Yeah, we do, don't we? Huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
Outside of the distraction of him being there, Chicken Plays Saffron is great. I didn't realize until this rewatch how heavily they leaned on the seduction angle. Like every single person she encounters, she tries to seduce. And I also didn't remember how long they kept everyone on the hook before they revealed, she's you know, performing a con job on him.
Yeah, because it's a good enough story as, Mal misunderstood the local customs, and now what does he do? And the preacher saying, you better, not, you know, special place in hell for you if you take advantage of this situation. And then that table gets flipped when it's like, oh, she's no innocent. In fact, quite the opposite. In fact, Inara even is in respect of her talents.
Yeah. Maybe it's because I'm so familiar with the will they won't they Sam and Diane thing with Inara
with and Malcolm. And Inara.
That ending was pretty cute the first time I saw it. It didn't quite hold up the second time.
I'm not going to argue with you. It was very cute. Like the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, those two. Right. But now after so many rewatches and years, you're like, okay, yeah, no, that's cute.
A little bit on the nose or whatever.
Yeah.
But plus also this rewatch of Firefly, I didn't realize how much they really hammer home. Like, hey, everyone at home, if you haven't figured out, Wash and Zoe, they really love each other. They love each other a lot. Every single time, they're going to be healthy and respectful and have banter at all times because they love each other a lot.
Yeah. But that is something you don't know. it is the typical thing to have, you know, the guy, the spaceship pilot, be the Randy Roustabout, right? So I think he was trying to steer away from type there and really hammer home the loyalty, because otherwise you'd assume Wash is a flyboy, right?
Yeah, correct. And that's a good point. We have not yet reached the point. There's one point during the whole season where you could tell they just didn't have a flight stick and they asked him to mime it. And they assumed that later they were going to frame out the part. But they it's some scene where he's navigating and landing. But then It's very much a full frame thing, and he's very clearly holding nothing as he breathes deeply.
No, I know, because he moves his whole body. I know which scene you're talking about. I don't think we've hit that one yet.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. But this was a great episode. This might be the best, certainly the best of all the ones we've seen so far. This is the first one where everything clicks, everyone's come together. Even the opening little vignette where Malcolm says, "I swear by my pretty floral bonnet that I'll end you," you know, and then they have a shootout at the beginning. Like, you could start the whole series right there, and you're going to be hitting all cylinders.
Yeah, and I think that is a function of the fact that they were still in the world of not everybody's going to watch every week. Nobody has a DVR yet, so let's make sure we reintroduce the characters a little bit. He, you know, Zoe's the tough one, Mal's the clever one, Jane is the one, the pragmatist, and so you get that. But man, you get it just the right amount in this episode. I agree with you. Of the ones we've watched so far, it's definitely the best.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's still a good show. Tom, newsflash, Firefly, still great.
Yeah, man. Just good stuff, and I. No spoilers, but I really do hope we see that old Christina Hendricks playing Saffron again someday.
Man, well, I mean, I feel like they set up a really interesting character there. I bet she's got some backstory. Wonderful.
No, Mal set her down on that planet, and that was the right thing to do, not to kill her, and she'll never come back and harm me. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. We really appreciate your support at patreon.com/cordkillers, which is why we do spoiler in time, because you guys make it happen.
Heck yeah.
We'll see you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.